Hi, Rebecca. I can't hear you.
Hello, how are you doing?
Berta, I'm all right. How are you? How's that baby?
She's feeding, per usual. Actually, it's been like 3 hours and 15 minutes since I fed her.
Wow.
But she was sleeping for part of the time and she wasn't screaming her head off. So she's extending it a little bit, but still sometimes she'll eat an hour later. No, it just depends, but...
Yeah,
she's relaxing.
I wish I were close and I could hold her. I need some baby. My neighbor, probably a month ago or so, I saw my new neighbor out in the backyard and she was very big pregnant. I was like, ah. So I ran out there and we talked for a while. It was funny because she already followed me. So that was funny.
Oh, wow. Did she know it was you? Yeah.
Okay. No. Yeah. And so we were talking, what was really funny is she had just shown her husband a reel that I did the night before. I was like, shh, don't say you live next to me or any of that. Cause there's some weirdo men out there and
yes,
they send me very disturbing stuff. So anyway, So we got to talking and we hit it off and I was like, oh, you got to come over and we can do reels. I was like, are you comfortable? And she said, oh yeah, for sure. That was on Tuesday and she was 36, like she was almost 37 weeks the next day, maybe. And so on Thursday, she texted me and was like, I've been having really strong Braxton Hicks. I don't know what to do. And I was in, no, wait, it was Wednesday because I was in happy hour with the other girls. And so when I got done, I texted her and said, remind me how many weeks you are. Tell me what's going on. And she wrote back. She said, never mind. I'm on my way to the hospital. I started throwing up. And she ended up having the baby.
Oh, right after that.
Yeah. So now I'm like, well, I guess we have to do baby reels.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. You have a fresh baby. That's nice.
And I was like, damn, I needed that pregnant girl though. It's so awkward to be my age and pretend to be pregnant on a reel.
Yeah. It's funny though. It's like good comedy.
Yeah. It's great comedy, but people can be rude. So
yeah, that's true.
Anyway. Where is everybody at? I know we had quite a few people RSVP. I did jump on a little early though, so.
Yeah, hopefully. Me too. I was just like, let me just hop on before I forget or lose track of time. So I'm usually a few minutes late.
I think a lot of people came to a lot of them last week too. So they might be like, oh, I can miss this one.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm thinking, let me run this by you. I was thinking about creating a private podcast just for students and converting the happy hours to podcast recordings. And that way people can listen to them without, like students can listen to them and putting them all, Calm Labor and VBAC Lab in the same.
Yeah.
And that way people can listen to them instead of having to watch them. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, when I've watched them back, I don't even watch them. I just listen to them.
So it works
more convenient. Yeah.
Okay. I think I may start that and maybe go back like 6 or 8 months and put them on. That way there's a good library because I feel like it would also encourage some of the girls who can't make it to happy hour to feel like they're getting to know everyone.
Yes. I know like when there was like a mishap, 3 weeks of either timing or it was a holiday or something weird, or I had it backwards.
I remember.
Like there was something every week. And I was like, oh my God, I want to hear Judith's story so badly. So I went back and I watched.
I know.
And then I never did. She ended up coming later.
Yeah. I think it would be good for the Calm Labor students to be able to hear you guys talking about prepping and what you wish you would have done. And how you would have done something differently or what have you, and walking through all that as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I've been thinking about it. One of my business mastermind groups that I belong to, that's what he does for our like monthly calls. Nice. I like the convenience and being able to work and listen and not have to think. So I was just telling Rebecca, I think I'm going to start turning the happy hour recordings into a private podcast just for my students so that you guys can just listen to the weekly happy hour if you miss it. Or if you're like, man, I really want to rehear, listen to it again. Because we've had some really powerful ones.
Or even his advice. Like, wait, what did she say I should do? Hold on. I need to go back and listen to that. Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. And I can maybe even have one of my assistants for the podcast show notes, because it's not like I have to do it with SEO or any of that. She could just say Cassie's birth story, talking about GDM, put like highlight notes that you guys can be like, oh yeah, let's go back and look at that. I think I might do that. I've been playing around with it and I'm at a point where I have a little extra time that I can take something new on. So I might do that. Anyway.
Can you see my boob right now?
I can see part of it, but that's okay.
I'm like, I can't see my picture very well. So I was like going close. Wait a second. Can you? We're all friends here, right? At this point, I feel like I can just be topless constantly. Like it even matters, but.
Yeah, I've seen more boobs than most little boys seeking out pornography, whatever. I've seen more boobs and vagina in my lifetime, whatever. It doesn't even faze me. Even if I'm out in public, like I don't see it.
Yeah, Chris went, my husband, when we got home from the hospital, one of the first things he said to Taylor, get used to seeing your mom's boobs because you're going to be seeing them a lot.
Yeah.
Because I am like, no doubt. She gets all up in there. She's all interested in like how she latches and she looks.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But I think that's how we normalize it for our daughters and our son. Not that it's so that when they're out in public, they're not like these jerks that make these horrible comments.
Yes.
About breastfeeding moms. And it just floors me. Like even you guys, I got like just the censorship in general around female bodies and like birth and the natural process of all that. I got locked out of my Fearless Birth group again this week.
Oh my God.
Like for talking about sex during pregnancy and probably for saying the word vagina, I'm sure, but it didn't say, but I had this big red banner and I'm like, oh, fantastic, whatever. Yeah. And yet I get penis pictures daily sent to me, but they don't do nothing about that.
That's terrible.
And you guys have seen, most of you guys have probably seen the weirdos on my face, on my Instagram lives. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand how I can't talk about sex during pregnancy. But we all know there's women and men that are doing very sexual things on Facebook and Instagram. And it's obvious, but I get flagged as a nurse who's teaching about birth. I don't understand it. Like, I can't wrap my mind around it. But anyway, we're not here about that. So I was just telling Taylor, I was just telling Rebecca and the other girls, and I don't know, I don't think Emily or maybe Megan heard, but I think I'm going to create a private podcast for my students where I'm going to convert the student workshops and the happy hours into podcast episodes. They're not going to be like top-notch quality or any of that. And you guys are going to hear us talking about other stuff because I don't have time to just go back and edit them all. But I think so that you guys, when you want to go back and let's say Emily, when she shared her birth story, you guys can go back and see which episode that is and listen to it. And people who can't attend happy hours can go back and listen, because I think that will be easier than watching videos. We'll also have the video recording still, but I just think that'll be, hi, baby. Hi. Oh my goodness. Taylor needs to have a team baby for us, a new baby. What'd you say? There you go. All right. So let's see how everybody's doing. How are you doing, Elizabeth?
I'm doing really well. Yeah. It's a quiet morning here at home. So yeah.
Do you want to edit your name? Do you know how to edit your name? Because I don't think Emily's, look at my students not edit their names right now.
I got to figure out how to do it. I'm on my laptop.
It's on your laptop, hover over your picture and click the three dots
push
your name. For those of you, if you got anybody's new, we like you guys to edit your name and put whether you're trying to conceive, how many weeks postpartum you are, how many weeks pregnant you are. And that way, like we've got, I'll edit you, Taylor. Don't do it while you're driving. Taylor is our team doula. There she is. Yeah. So that gives us that way. If you ask me a question, Rebecca, how many weeks are you? And I'll do it.
8 weeks postpartum.
Eight.
I know. Time flies and you're having fun.
All right. There we have it. You're 8. Emily's 9. Yay. Okay. And Elizabeth is one of our newer students and she is not yet trying to conceive. So
no,
we should put, yeah, like 5 months postpartum after C-section, wanting to educate before I try to conceive.
Yes. Yeah.
That only happens in the VBAC lab. That doesn't happen in calm labor. I have a lot of trying to conceive mamas, but.
Yeah, no, definitely not ready yet. And we're definitely going to wait until next, at least when we talked about it, the earliest we think we're going to try, and because we did IVF, this is all in my story that I posted, but the earliest we're probably going to go back to our clinic is probably going to be like May or June of next year. And our daughter was born at the end of April. So we feel like that potentially puts kids about 2 years apart. And that to us feels like a good age difference, like enough time to recover from number one. And then, yeah.
No, I think that's a perfect 2 to 4 years, I feel like is such a good distance. Mm-hmm. 4 years is pushing it if you want them to grow up together.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to have a little mama, then wait until your child is 9, 10, 11. Like Rebecca and I did. Lainey calls herself Grayson's other mom. Like she's his second mom. But teenagers, they're hit or miss.
That and after I had my C-section, my midwife and the OB that did the C-section both really said, they're like, we really highly recommend if you want to VBAC that you wait until you wait at least a year before conceiving number two. So that's just, and then again, we've got some things that we want to, we were supposed to go to Paris in March of 2020. And that's part of in our story, which just makes things interesting. And that got canceled. And so we're like, we still haven't done that. And we're like, when are we going to do that? With two kids, that's going to be next to impossible. So we're hoping to do that next spring when she's about a year old. My parents can take her for a week. We can take a trip, the two of us, and then go back to jumping into the embryo transfer stuff.
That sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah. That, and then we planned like a long camping trip with my family for the beginning of June. So we've got some things that we're like, you know what, we want to try and do some of those things before we get pregnant with baby number two. So
yeah, especially if you get pregnant and you're sick, then that, like, just being pregnant itself, you can do a lot in life, but if you're sick, it's, you don't want to do anything. So that makes it difficult. Yeah. We're happy to have you here. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and I was with my daughter. In fact, we were on a camping trip with my family shortly after I found out I was pregnant and I was miserable and trying to hide it from my family. That's part of how my mom knew. I knew something was up. Something was off. You weren't right. But my mom also has weird early pregnancy radar. Like she's a nurse and with a couple of other, her coworkers, she went up to them and she's, you're pregnant. And they're like, how do you know? Super early. She just has weird pregnancy radar.
Yeah. But I have that too, but I think it falls into my empath abilities as well.
But yeah, I'm excited to be here and just learn and soak things up and just already just started doing some of the online like modules and stuff. And had led to some really good conversations with my husband about, hey, how was her birth? Do you feel like you're dealing with any like trauma from it or concerns, even though we're a year out or more from actually getting pregnant with baby number two? So I'm really excited about it all.
Oh, I think that's so wise. I think that is so wise because there can be triggers throughout the pregnancy. And if you guys figure that out like now and start coming up with ways to handle that. And I just think education in general is so critical when it comes to just parenting, all of it from the time, from before conception, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, parenting, all the way. It's just so important and often overlooked in certain stages of that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And because I realized too, reflecting on my birth, the birth story with my daughter, that there were things that having gone through IVF and infertility that probably led to some things happening with her birth. We moved up a scheduled induction because I basically had a little bit of a panic attack because we were so close, and we were this close to like my due date, and some things happened, and I was done. I was mentally, emotionally done because we'd worked so hard that I was so afraid of the possibility of the negative mm-hmm. thing happening, or the possibility of a stillbirth or something like that, that probably pushed me to move up an induction out of the emotional fear state of that. So we were working.
I think that is so wise to even say, because I think a lot of us that have had any birth trauma, if we go back to a lot of it, those decisions were made out of fear-based emotions instead of stopping. And the sad thing is they use a lot of fear tactics too. Yeah. So navigating that, who in the hell can think straight when your provider is saying to you, your baby could die?
It wasn't actually even my provider. It was all like driven by me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, just my own anxiety got in my way.
Yeah.
So that's where I just know I've learned enough about myself now to know like how I will probably be able to better manage that in the future.
Well, I was just going to say that I totally understand that, because we had infertility for 7 years. And so finally we got pregnant, and it was the same kind of thing that still comes up. Oh my God, the fear of losing. And then Trish said, when the provider is saying, because one of my midwives was just like, always talking about induction, all about C-section, always about stillbirth and how old I am and the fact that I had COVID and all this stuff. And so when like going in the next time, you're going to definitely be dealing with a lot more crap from your provider, because it's a VBAC. Even if they are VBAC friendly or supportive, they're still going to say things that are going to trigger that. So it's even more important to, I don't know, stand your ground and get mentally prepared for that too. Like not only on your own self, because the day before she was born, I'm literally crying, bawling in her room. Are you going to come? And having that fear of what if she doesn't come and all this stuff I have to take back? I can't even return it. Like I went through all the things. I can't even return it. I only go look in this room, but all that stuff. And she was 9 days past due, but I had a successful VBAC. But it was constantly of telling myself, even though I was afraid or I was scared or I was nervous, or I let, you know, Sue get in my head, because I had really great midwives, but this one I had to stop seeing at like a month or two before I gave birth because she was just too negative. But just be prepared for it to be harder. Okay. Because of the fact that the provider, even like I said, even if they are VBAC friendly, will still say that, but you'll be able to do it. So if you, I think, feel like, what you're doing is educating yourself and getting prepared. Like you expect it to be, you can work towards it. Do we ever know every single thing that's going to come up? No, but you have a game plan.
Yeah.
But you can still do it. Like I was afraid and I still said, I'm going to stick my ground. There's nothing wrong with me. Nothing wrong with the baby. I'm going to wait. I'm going to trust my body, trust in timing. And then it happened and it was beautiful.
Cool. Thanks for that. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yes.
Hey, Emily, how are you? You don't even look like you had a baby in any sort of fashion.
Thanks What's for happened? Saying that, because I feel like now I understand why they say after your second baby, you don't bounce back as fast. Cause I'm like, after my first one, I was back in my jeans, not really, but I was in like at least my bigger jeans. And now I'm like, why don't these fit me yet? Shouldn't they fit? But
no, they should.
My big ones should, but I'm good. We're good. Let me get her. She's down here in her seat.
Oh my gosh. Wait, Rebecca, I need to see yours too. I've seen she had hers popped up there. Look at that baby. Oh my gosh.
Now she's got hiccups because she was in her seat for 30 seconds. She gets hiccups right away.
How dare you put her down? Hi, baby girl. Oh my goodness. I have so many kids. And unfortunately, because I had so many kids, my kids are all being smart and like they don't want to have kids till their 30s because they've all raised babies practically. They know, my kids know the realities of having a baby in the house. Like all of them.
Oh yes, I forgot. So there is exciting news. My twin sister is pregnant.
Oh,
so of course, I'm the only one who knows.
What number is this for her?
This is her first. She just got married in June. And they were like, okay, we're 30. She's 35. He's older. So we were like, she was like, all right, we better start trying. So I told her like an ovulation predictor kit to try. And first, apparently it happened the first time. So nobody knows yet but me, because I obviously have the privilege. The twin. So she's going to tell everybody soon. She's 12 weeks.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
So exciting. How are you doing otherwise?
Pretty good. There's good days and there's bad days. A lot of that hinges on my toddler and his behavior. But
God, it's no joke when you have a toddler and a newborn. It's literally, if you can do that, you can do anything in life.
Yeah.
I swear.
Yep. And there's days that he loves her so much. He loves being a brother. He's so sweet. But then there's other days that he just, you can tell, wants more attention, even though we are very deliberate about trying to give him a lot of attention. But there's days that he's just like screaming in her face. Making her, like yesterday, we had a 2-hour car drive, which turned into a 3.5-hour drive. Because when we finally got her to sleep, he decided he had to poop. So we had to stop.
Yes.
And then we go to the bathroom and I'm like, I don't think you really had to go that bad.
Yeah.
But
there's on car drives, that's the one time I remember being like, damn, why didn't you just stay in a diaper?
Yeah.
So hard. Realized
my toast was going to burn. I had to turn off my toaster.
Yeah. The other thing about toddlers is they're really little mini narcissists at that age.
Yeah.
So they do not understand waiting for their needs at all. There is no, especially when they're the only one. I think if you have another baby with her, she's going to be used to having a sibling and having to wait for their needs. And her needs may not always be priority, but that going from that one toddler to another baby is really an interesting switch.
Yeah. I've definitely thought like probably would have been easier if he were younger, because he's 3, like he's, but it's also, he helps, like he likes to help, gets the wipes and stuff.
Oh yeah.
It's hard to say, but there's times that I'm like, holy cow, this is awful. Sometimes I'm just like, I can't, I guess now I know like what things trigger me. Like I'm very triggered by a lot of loud noise and chaos. And if she's crying, you know how like the little tiny babies will be like scream crying so they can barely breathe, especially in the car.
Yes.
I'm like, I can't listen to this. We have to stop. I have to hold her and help her. And then he's like screaming in the backseat. I'm just like,
you wonder what they're thinking about that, because that a newborn screaming in a car seat in a car is literally like deafening. And you have to wonder what he's thinking. What the hell is wrong with her? What is happening in my space? So yeah, Grayson was my only child who screamed every single time we latched his buckle. Every time. And we did a lot of traveling. A lot. And I have never had that. For my other kids, they were all comforted by the car seat. That was a really, and I remember thinking, because I was 42 when I had him. So I was like, is this getting to me in a way that it didn't when I was in my 20s having kids?
It's a good question. Or, fair question, you know, for sure.
Yeah, because I definitely am triggered by chaos and noise as well. And clutter. Don't do well with clutter.
Yeah.
My husband says I do fine with my own clutter. It's everyone else's clutter. But the problem with that is that I know that I will be the one to clean up all the clutter. Yeah, Rebecca's agreed. So it's different for their clutter because no one cleans their clutter up but me. But yeah, it's going. And I think also there's a huge change when you go from 2 to 3 kids too. That was tough for me going from 2 to 3, because there's a lot you can do with 2 arms and 2 kids. But if you have a lot, if they're all young, like for sure, make sure your oldest one is old enough to fend for themselves somewhat, because it's really hard having 3 little ones at home. But, and I do find it valuable that at least your older one can walk by the time you have, because my first 2 were 16 months apart. And luckily for me, Ian was an early walker. He's my only one. I think God knew. I don't know. I remember the very first time I was alone with him and Hunter, because my mom stayed with me for 2 weeks. And I lived in this apartment that had this gorgeous pathway into like, it had these big trees, but it went around the back of the building to my door. And when we rented it, we loved it because of that, because it looked out and it was beautiful, but it was a long path from the parking lot to the door. I remember the first time I was alone and I went grocery shopping and I got back home and I had two babies, groceries, a long path. And I was like, I can't leave them alone in the car. I can't leave them alone in the apartment. What the hell do I do? I really stood there like just bawling because I didn't know what to do. And I didn't have a double stroller. I didn't, this was a long time ago. Like it wasn't as readily available as they are now. And they definitely were not compact. You had to have a stinking utility van to transport one. So it was just so, it was so mind boggling. And Ian was not a confident walker. He was 16 months and Hunter was a newborn. It was like, I remember just crying and having to carry both of them and one bag of grocery back and forth till I got it done. And I was like, never again. Anyway, I digress. So let's move on. Let's see how Megan's doing. And again, for you guys, if it's your first time with just the VBAC lab, if you guys were part of Fearless Birth, but new students, go ahead and we love for our new VBAC mamas to share. Elizabeth, we'll have you do that maybe next week, share your birth story, but we'd love to hear your previous birth story, what brings you here, all of that. All right, Megan, you're up.
Hi, I'm Megan. Nice to meet you. It's nice that it's such a small group. I appreciate that. So I'm sorry I have to go in about 5 or 7 minutes. We had COVID the last 2 weeks. So on my first week of maternity leave. So all these appointments had gotten switched and stuff. But I did the Fearless Birth class thing last week and I decided to join. So I'm binging all the stuff as fast as I can. So I have a 5-year-old son. He's just started kindergarten and I was 38 when I had him. Pretty normal pregnancy. And then my water broke at 8 and I didn't know what I was doing. So I went at 2 in the morning and I was at a 0. And I slept a little bit and then they gave me all the things, me and Pitocin, and they did the bulb. And the bulb was more painful than anything. That was the most painful thing I had ever experienced. I didn't progress. And that was Wednesday night. Thursday evening, Thursday at 1 at 4 in the morning, I got an epidural. And then Friday, the nurse came in and was like, you haven't been checked in a while. We should check you. And they put their hand up and they felt his face. He was a facial presentation. At that point, we couldn't do anything because he would have to have gone. He was coming out like this. So he would have to put in like this. And so we had no choice. So it was like, okay, we're having a C-section. I recovered pretty quickly and that was good. There was the like, wait a second, that didn't really go as planned. Like I didn't want the escalation of stuff. Yeah. In 2014, I worked as a doula for a hot minute. I hadn't had kids yet and just thought it would be super exciting. And it was at a hospital. It was at a birth center. And that was really neat because I got to be part of so many births. And so now then we tried to get pregnant. Obviously I'm older. So that took a long time. My numbers, I was not a good IVF candidate because my numbers were really low. So we ended up using a donor egg. So this is a donor egg baby and I got pregnant right away. So that was good. So now I'm 38 weeks. The pregnancy is pretty good. I just have to take like iron supplements. And then they just want to monitor me at home for preeclampsia. So they're just I'm just doing my blood pressure every day and it's fine so far, but they do want to induce me next week. There we go again, and I guess I can't have miso. I'm trying to download all this and put it in my brain of how to be empowered during that time.
Yeah. Were you the one that posted about the induction class?
I did. Yeah.
I actually have it. I used to have it as what would you call it? Like an evergreen webinar for people to watch.
Okay.
And I stopped that platform. So I just relogged into that platform and actually I'm watching it download as we've been talking. And so I'm going to put it on YouTube and then link it in there.
Cool.
It's a webinar that I did. So you'll have to go through the fluff of me introducing myself and all that to get to the meat of it.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm glad you told me that because I had no idea. I didn't even think about that. It's like the last thing on my brain. So yeah, that's a lot to deal with. And I can't even imagine, because I know, like, just when I was pregnant with Grayson, just the aspect of being older, you add in IVF, then you add in VBAC. It's like, it's a lot of roadblocks to walk through. So,
right. Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
I'm glad that everything is healthy. I've not experienced anything lately. Yesterday, we went on a day, and it was like she was just I got two drinks, like two water and something else, and it was like a tea, and she was just sitting on my bladder. It was just like lightning crash, like the entire time. And I was oh man, I gotta sit down.
Yeah,
it's too much.
Days are coming to an end.
Yes. Anyway,
how do you feel about your providers, as far as, because I love that you have experienced the natural process of birth so much as a doula, and seeing what we're capable of when we're left alone.
Yeah.
So I think that's a huge benefit for you going into this. How do you feel about your providers? Would you say they are VBAC friendly, that they're birth friendly, or that they're more medical?
I was told like I had to have an epidural and she did go over the statistics of uterine eruption. And I feel like I remember last time my birth plan, I said, I don't want Pitocin. And I remember the doctor coming in saying, so I see on your chart, you don't want Pitocin, but we're going to give you Pitocin. And okay. So I feel like they're like, it's a Kaiser hospital. So they're breastfeeding friendly. They like skin to skin. They are very well known for having VBACs. So that's good.
I love working for Kaiser. Love working for Kaiser. Yeah.
Oh, really? Sacramento.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't worked in Sacramento, but I love working for Kaisers. And my main reason is that there's not a time crunch as far as the providers wanting to get to a soccer game or get home. They're just there.
Okay.
And so I think that does take away some of the stress of, I need to deliver her before I need to get home or what have you.
That's true.
Yeah, I like that a lot. When I first started doing travel nursing, I kept hearing all these bad things about Kaiser, but I don't think that applies to labor and delivery in particular. I think it might be other sections of the hospital, because I've never had a bad experience ever.
That's good. Yeah. And they do have midwives on the staff, so you can pick midwives or doctors. Yeah. So that's kind of nice.
I love that. And they're so laid back. Yeah. I really feel like they're very non-aggressive. How do you feel about them saying you have to have an epidural?
I don't know.
ACOG does not support that for VBAC mom.
Yeah. I feel it's just, I want to make the decision. I don't want somebody else telling me that. I know.
I want to tell you, as a long-time labor and delivery nurse, that worst case scenario, we can get you back and get you under general within 4 minutes.
Right.
You're out. You're done. Baby can be out. And we do drills to practice to get babies out within 6 minutes, 6 to 8 minutes. So worst case scenario, you would go under general.
Yeah.
I have not had one of my VBAC students go under general for a uterine rupture. Now, we've had other emergent type situations, but
is uterine eruption, does that happen a lot?
It's very slim chances. Yeah. The rate of it happening for a VBAC one VBAC, we have VBAC 2Cs, we've had VBAC 3Cs. Also in Nashville, we've got home birth people, they do VBAC home births here. And I've talked extensively to the midwives who do it, and I feel very confident in them. For me personally, I would rather be in a birth center or a hospital if I were attempting any slightly high risk delivery, just because I've seen the worst of the worst. So do I support my students who want her home birth? 100%. But I want to know, what's their transfer rate? What's their transfer process? What hospital's backing them up? What OB is backing? All those things that you want to know. But that being said, for you, if your uterine rupture is very slight, the chance of that, There is absolutely no reason for you to have an epidural in place, running or not running, just in case. Because we can, if there's a sign that that might be happening and they're talking to you, usually they're going to get you back to the OR before it's an emergent situation. They're not going to wait until it's like, we need to get the baby out there. They're going to know the
signs. Yeah.
They can sit you up and do a spinal very quick. Right. They can put an epidural in quickly. I have emergent situations come into triage where we have to get them back to OR right then and there. They don't come in with an epidural ready for the emergent situation. We handle it right then and there. So I don't know many labor nurses that would even tell you that we can do it so quick. Yeah. And the chances of you having a successful VBAC goes up tremendously by you being allowed to move and labor how you want. What just happened? I don't know what's happening. So that my recommendation is just, I would hold your ground on that one. Anybody else want to jump in on that? Or when are they wanting to induce you?
Next Tuesday.
And how do you feel about that? Are you in agreement with that?
I'm learning to live with it. I don't know.
Or it's your choice.
I know.
I tell the girls all the time, they can't induce you if you're not there.
So, yeah, that's true. You know. That's
if you true. Have any more questions, so with part of the being one of our students is you can create a group chat with me and Taylor. Have you already done that?
I haven't yet. No, I was going to ask. Is it up at the top?
Yeah.
I mean, down below, but
on the app, it's down below, I believe.
Oh,
on
okay. I haven't downloaded the app yet.
It's up at the top. So create that. It's Taylor McKay and then myself, and just give a download of who you are that way. Cause I know Taylor hopped off, and then you can ask us whatever questions. If the doctor's saying something, all of these things we can, obviously I'm slacking a bit from the circle, like just normal comments. Mm-hmm. We definitely keep the labor bat signal as like a high priority.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'll see you later.
See you tonight too. Bye.
Oh, wait, we don't have anything tonight.
Oh, okay. I thought there was another one.
No, it's every other week. So we do it daytime
on one Monday.
And then the next week it's nighttime.
Okay.
We rotate them that way for people like that are in other countries, they can come because some of my girls are in other countries.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Fine. Bye.
Hey, Rita. 39 weeks and 2 days. How are you?
I'm good. Just waiting for my smallest ones to fall asleep. But yeah, other than that,
What time is it right now for you?
It's 12:42 during the day. So this is nap time.
Oh, I was thinking it was like nighttime because it's so dark and calm.
No, it's just I have the blinds closed.
So. Do you lay with them to get them to sleep?
Usually, yeah.
I always did too. I just never could get nap time figured out.
It's a chance for me to rest as well. So
why not? Oh, a little arm snake around you. How are you doing? Like mentally?
Physically, I would say very good. Like since last happy hour that we had with all the other students, I had some going on, but they calmed down after a good rest of after a night. And since he has been calm mentally. Oof, I'm trying to figure out so many things. I think I was looking for a provider or a midwife, somebody that could monitor me during the time of labor that I'm outside of the hospital so that I can stay out of the hospital as long as possible. And I got recommended 3 or 4 and it doesn't work for all of them. So I'm basically back to again.
That most mamas and my VBAC mamas that labor at home, no one's monitoring them. So that you can labor at home until I still would recommend until you get to active labor and then go in and then just, unless there's something absolutely going on or wrong, just refuse a C-section. They can't force
you. I know. It's just, somehow I don't want to have that responsibility on me during labor of
Go into the hospital and be monitored and just refuse a C-section.
But how do I deal with all the interventions that they're going to want to do?
A follower that I've shared her story before, and she was a VBAC 2C, came all the way over from Guam, I think it was. I'm blanking right now. I believe it was Guam. And because she found a provider that would do it, she was at home, her water broke, and she was with her doula, with her husband who had flown in. They went to the hospital, they get there and they start prepping her for the OR for a C-section. She's like, no, I'm with doctor, we're having a VBAC 2C. And they were like, our hospital doesn't do that. We don't do VBAC 2Cs. She refused to sign it. And they just left her alone in the room. Like they wouldn't do anything to help her labor go or stop or nothing. Like they basically just left her at it. Her husband left and went and bought an electric pump, came back and they did nipple stimulation and she delivered vaginally.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, but it takes some, I hate that you're going through all of this now after she hired a doula who took her money and is now saying she doesn't think she should go against the doctor or the hospital because the hospital doesn't do VBAC 3Cs. And like, she's saying the doctor could get in trouble. And why would you want to do that? Even though she took her money to labor her as a VBAC 3C, like I'm so blown away by that, that I really feel like you need to write a review on that. That for sure. That needs to be set up. She didn't agree. She knew your history when she took your money.
Yeah, no, I have been like, she was my doula last time, or her team. It was a different doula, yeah. But she knows my history with my last three pregnancies. She knew exactly what she was getting into.
Yeah, that's wrong. Yeah.
Really hoping that she will advocate for me because I shouldn't, but I doubt myself that I will advocate for myself. I don't know. I'm just not that type. I'm always amazed at Rebecca, how strong you are, like for all of that. I don't know how you did. Did none of the risks cross your mind or did you just shut it off? Like,
oh, every single one of them did. Every one of them did. But you know what? It was the data that I used in the education. It was like reminding myself of what my rights are, regardless of what they say. I know what my rights are. I know just because it's policy doesn't make it law. And when everything's okay and there's no signs that I'm in danger, no signs the baby's in danger, then I have to trust that it's okay. And I did, thank God, I did have a doula and I had a really great midwife who delivered, even though I went through a lot of stuff. So once I got into the hospital, I mean, I was 9 centimeters dilated. I could have stayed home and had the baby if I had not known what transition was because I was like shaking so bad, but it was fine. And like, even during labor, a couple times crossed my mind where I just checked in with my uterus, I guess. And just like, oh, wow, it doesn't hurt. Nothing's happening. There's no like rupture pain or anything like that. It's just, if you're already doubting yourself, that's where you have to check and remind yourself that you're strong. Remind yourself that it's your body, it's your baby, your rights, it's your money that's paying the doctor. And the doula, that's really sad because they have a scope of practice and she wouldn't be able to do anything outside of anything anyway, except just be there by your side and to advocate for what you want. It's not, that's just really sad. I'm sorry about that, but just remind yourself that you're strong, that you can do this. As long as there's no danger, if they say there's a chance. If they're like, and here's the thing too, the difference between emergency and like, oh, it's convenience for them. If there's a true emergency, they're going to take you back no matter what. They're not even going to ask you. They're going to be like, oh, wow, this is about to happen. So I'm just going to take you. They're not going to ask for your like consent. You know what I mean? Because you give the consent at the beginning of if there's an emergency, this is what we have to do.
They will, but it'd be very quick. And you're going to know that it's urgent. And at that point, like there's going to be so many like indications. This won't be if we wait any longer, we may have this situation. So we should probably go back. And if you say, can I have time to think? And they're like, no, you don't. You need to know this is a now situation. That is an entirely different. And my advice to anyone in that is to go with that call. And if you find out later that they hyper reacted, then so be it. But you don't want to find out the hard way that you didn't lean into their expertise in that. So I truly believe that I've never worked with one physician that would act like it is an absolute, we need to go now, get this baby out within 10 minutes, emergent. I have worked with plenty of them who will hint at it and be like, this is really what I think we should do because we're going to end up with this and that and the other. But there's a much different vibe to that. Okay. And if they're saying to you, we just don't think it's safe and you could be risking this and all that, that is not an emergent. That's a, we think thing. What if? That's a what if thing.
That is really helpful. And between those two, like last time I got threatened with all of this and that could happen and what not all, right? And I'm like, I feel like that is a threat that is going to come this time. And I'm taking that for serious. And like, this, what really is an emergency and what isn't. I'm going to write that down so that I know.
Yeah, because it's what ifs and this could. That is not what's currently happening. It's this is happening now. We need to go back. That's a much different situation. Or we are seeing signs that this is starting to happen. We need to go back. It, in the case of a VBAC, that is also indication that you need to go back. There are early signs, and I don't want you to wait until it's we need to get the baby out in 6 minutes type of thing. So
I would say too, don't make any decision out of fear, out of just pure fear. Make the decision out of facts. So if they can show you facts, this is what she's saying that's happening. And obviously you got to make yourself healthy and the baby too, but
yeah,
don't do it. If they wanted me to come in on Sunday for a C-section because the hospital was not going to induce me. They're like, we're not going to induce a VBAC, even because that's what my one midwife wanted to do. And I'm like, well, I'm not scheduling a C-section. And it was literally one more day. And they're thinking, oh, she can't do it. The baby won't fit through her pelvis, blah, 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 blah. But I did. And I did it unmedicated. And I did it in an hour and a half. So F them.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That'll be our new motto for the VBAC lab.
No, I've like, all of this time I'm thinking of Rebecca did it. Think of how she was so strong. You're my, I don't know.
Wait, because you don't get strong out of just, oh, I feel strong. Like you have to go through it. And it's a constant, I have so many fears that go into my head that I have to battle, but I know that this is not me. This is just a thought. And our thoughts are created based on our experiences or things that we have heard, read, seen. So we can't control the thought that comes into our brain, but we can control the thoughts that we turn to beliefs and the ones that we focus on. And if we recognize, oh, wait, this is just a thought because of a previous experience, how can I recheck my brain basically? And then that's where I look at the facts. Like, oh, wait, there's nothing wrong with me, nothing wrong with the baby. Then no, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not doing it because they don't think I should or they don't think I can. I know what my body's capable of, and I'm going to, until it shows me otherwise, I'm going to trust it.
I think that's great.
That's great. Trish, another question that I had, should I, like, I haven't had a vaginal exam during this whole pregnancy, which amazes me, like that I've been before. I was thinking, should I ask for a membrane sweep at my 40-week checkup?
For sure. Yeah. Especially with all the adversity that you're facing. Yeah, I would. Do you think they would do it?
No, I'm pretty sure that the doctor would do it if I recommend one. Like he knows.
When do you, is that your next visit?
It's this Friday.
Yeah, I would do that. Hold on one second. And Taylor, you can talk about that as well. Why I always recommend at 40 weeks for my VBAC mamas to do some things just because of the walls that you guys face. Let me let Taylor, hold on. Someone's at my door.
Yeah. So in terms of VBACs, like because you guys get so much pushback when this is so weird, I'm on my phone and I don't see any of you. I just see Trisha's mannequin. Anyways, because you get so much pushback when it comes to like induction or like your providers don't want to induce you and all of those things, anything you can do leading up to that point that is on the low risk scale of trying things like membrane sweeps or nipple stimulation and curb walking and deep squats and any of those things, we can like to pump those up, especially for VBAC moms, for just for that reason, because anything we can do to help prep your body to lessen the chances of us getting to the point of an induction talk, the more the better. So yeah, I would also opt for a membrane sweep at 40 weeks if you feel comfortable with it. No, I would mentally prepare yourself going into it that the numbers that they're going to tell you, it doesn't mean the outcome of your birth. It doesn't mean the outcome of your labor, when your labor is going to start and all of that stuff that you know and you hear us rant about all the time. So make sure you're checking in with yourself before you go in there and say, even if I'm not able to get the membrane sweep because you have to be dilated to a centimeter. So even if I'm not able to get it, does not mean that like I'm not going to go into labor spontaneously. It really truly means nothing. More you go in there with the idea of you're giving your body a chance to potentially do something that will help progress you a little bit. And if you don't get that chance, it's okay. And does not mean that your body is failing or any of that. And you can go home and go for a curb walk or go for a nice long walk. And those things might just do exactly what you need it to do over the membrane sweep.
Yeah. Have you started nipple stimulation?
No, I haven't.
I would be doing that for sure 30 minutes a day. You do 15 on, rest 15 on the other side. Do that once a day. That will help get your cervix. I would start that today, get that cervix favorable.
You can do that manually, or does it have to be with a breast pump?
I prefer a breast pump on the lowest setting just because it will be less aggressive for your nipple, but you can do it with your hand. You can do it with a manual.
Okay. I'll get that. Sounds good. I feel a lot more comfortable. No.
Good. Good. We're here for you.
Thanks. Appreciate
that. You're welcome. Hey, Annie, how are you?
Hi, good. Thank you. How is everyone? Good. Yeah, so I haven't been on in a while.
I thought so.
Yeah. So unfortunately, with my initial pregnancy, when I signed for this course, I did miscarry, but I became pregnant like almost immediately afterwards, it seems, because I went to the doctor last week and I told him, I said, I have no idea how far along I am. I just know I'm pregnant again. And I was quite shocked when he said, you're 12 weeks already, which means I essentially...
That's so comforting though.
It was nice because I was like, oh, that means the first trimester is basically over. Thank God. So yeah, so excited to get back into the VBAC happy hours and back into my VBAC lab. So I took a little bit of a break. But yeah, it basically means I think I must have conceived within 2 weeks of my miscarriage or something, which the doctor did tell me is actually quite common, that the fertility rate can be pretty high immediately after, he said he's seen a lot of times. So we're quite
happy. Yeah, that's what they told me too when I had my losses, because they were like, I was like, how long do I wait? And they're like, whenever you want.
Yeah. And I loved his description too. He was very, I don't know, the way he described it to me was like, your body just knows and is trying to, he was saying like, your body knows you should be pregnant. And so it may, like he just said that was the best way he could describe it to me. So he said, you may find if you're ready, you'll get pregnant quite quickly. Yeah. So excited for this pregnancy. Got to do a little ultrasound last time I was there. So the doctor was, he was really nice because I just said, I don't know my due date or how far along I am. So he just took me himself into the ultrasound room and he did an ultrasound to get a date. He's very feedback supportive.
Oh, I love that. So
it right now it feels really nice. And I'm researching into trying to get a doula scheduled for that. And then, I had my first child, I had him on with an epidural. And then after reading a lot, I've decided this time to go unmedicated, looking into, I guess educating myself more on that, but really exciting to see like familiar faces, like Rebecca, I remember her from when I was with my first pregnancy and just successful VBAC. And
I thought as soon as I saw you on, I was like, I know I remember her. And then I was like, man, she must've been trying to conceive, because I was trying to figure out I knew it's been a while since I've seen you.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for your loss. And I'm so happy for the new baby. And being pregnant after a loss is tough all in itself, but I'm really happy that you skipped past the really hard part of being scared. That's a blessing. That's like a real blessing. So yeah, and obviously you weren't sick.
No. Yeah. So it wasn't too rough of a first trimester. I was just getting super tired and I work from home. So it's like a blessing and a curse. Like you can take a nap, but then you can also like not wake up from the nap for your call.
Yeah. I know this. I know this all too well, don't I?
So yeah. Very excited. It was nice going and seeing the doctor and the team over there. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're called Diana Health and close to Murfreesboro. I can never say the little town.
Is that where you're at?
I'm in Thompson Station in Williamson County. Okay. But
I think I knew that too.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Sorry, I'm just getting my.
And you're delivering at St. Thomas Rutherford?
No, it's Stonecrest.
Oh, that's right. I remember this too. Okay. Yeah. I'm not super familiar with them, but I have heard of them.
Yeah. So they're like a clinic that I guess uses one of the offices and then they deliver in Stonecrest.
Okay.
But yeah, so far it's been like a very refreshing experience.
Yeah.
Going in and stuff. Like last time, any blood tests I wanted to take, he was very like, he would explain, okay, if you don't want this one, that's fine. This one I do recommend, or you don't have to do the pap smear. Yeah. You don't have to do a lot of things were just like really given to me as my choice.
Yeah. It's so empowering.
Yeah.
And
it's such a beautiful feeling.
Yeah. And enables you to trust your providers. I think that's why I've found with a lot of my personal labor patients, because I really respect them and walk through the different options and tell them they have a choice. And a lot of my patients have never even heard that they had a choice, that when it comes to push comes to shove, and like they're maybe being presented that they need to have a C-section or they need to have vacuum or whatever, they'll look at me and be like, what do you think? What would you do? And I'm like, this is what I would do. And they trust me because I've respected them and given them options. And pick your battle. I pick my battles with my patients, like what's important and what's not. And I think that's important as well. And I think when your provider does that and they really stand strong on something, it like Rebecca said, you ask for stats, you ask for proof, you ask for studies, and then you walk through it with them, like respectfully, both of you.
Yeah.
We're happy to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
And to see you again. So anybody have any more questions before we hop off? We're actually pretty much on time. It's a rarity around here.
So I have a question maybe. Sure. You'll have to just cut me off when you want me to stop talking, because I have two things going on right now. One of them is going back to the midwife next week. So I feel like I'm fully healed, like no pain, no soreness, no nothing like that. But I feel like I might have a prolapse. And I'm having some digestive issues. So it's really annoying and frustrating. And so I'm going to go back to them to see her next week. I talked to her this morning. So I'm like, do I need to come in right now? Because here's me again. Like I have all the thoughts. Oh my God, this is going to be it. My bowels are going to be removed and I'm going to have to poop in a bag. And I'm like, all these thoughts come in. But then it's like, wait, just chill out for a second. Okay. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on if there is I know there is something that's not right, but I don't know if it's still normal part of healing.
My guess is it's a normal part of healing. You've not had a vaginal delivery before and stuff gets messed up down there for a little bit. So you could still have swelling. You could have swelling from straining to go to the bathroom. You could have swelling from carrying too much, like overdoing it. And I would my guess is it's all going to be completely normal when you go back. You can always see a pelvic floor specialist as well.
So I have that scheduled. I proactively scheduled that. And so that doesn't start until December. And so I do have that on the books, which is good. I guess I already have dealt with IBS for many years. And so it's like one of those things where I'm like, I think I'm like afraid to go to the bathroom, but then like I go to the bathroom and like, it's so TMI, you guys, but this is life. But like some of it's coming out. And so I think I'm like afraid to use the bathroom because I don't want to get a hemorrhoid or to like have it bulge or anything like that. But yeah, so I guess that's just something I'm dealing with right now. I think we're doing all right. I'm going to just increase the amount of like greens that I'm eating. My husband, he's so like intuitive sometimes. I think you haven't got your greens. I'm like, I wish it was that easy and that simple. I hope you're right. So I'm doing like dietary things. And even the other day, I'm like, Rebecca, what are you not letting go of? Because, you know, I'm all into the metaphysics of everything. And I really look at it holistically. And it was the thing that come up is like expectations and stuff. So I'm just like, I'm working on it in many areas and stuff. So
also, can I chime in about IBS for a second?
Sure. Hey, do you guys mind if I can't hop off. I'm going to put you on mute though, because my son is calling me. Yeah, I'm not getting off so we don't stop it.
Okay. Like I'm the IBS queen over here, and I was diagnosed with IBS in like grade 8 or grade 9. So I've lived with it majority of my life. And it was like non-existent when I was pregnant. My stomach was amazing. I could eat a bunch of things that like I'd never ate. Postpartum, I have never in my life experienced my IBS be as bad as it was. And apparently it's really common for like autoimmune things to flare up hardcore in postpartum, doing with hormones and all of that. And even if like you don't have IBS, in terms of just digestive issues after birth, it can be common in a wide range of things, in the sense that like your body is not only regulating hormones, your intestines and everything are getting back into place and like adjusting that way as well. But my IBS was horrific after I had my baby, like nervous to have another baby to go through that. And then to add on top of that, in my experience, I had a third degree tear. So that area was very sensitive. And I had that same fear of going to the bathroom a lot of the times. Was not necessarily what I think I was doing with any kind of prolapse or anything, but I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to strain. Like I literally just ripped to my butthole, and so much fear around like the bathroom. Also, I had like incontinence after birth. So I, for like the first 2 weeks, I didn't know when I was pooping. Like I had a lot of issues with that. And I would sob to Dave, like, I am going to shit my pants for the rest of my life. I'm never going to use the bathroom. I'm going to have to wear diapers. Basically, my midwife was like, your muscles down there are repairing from a lot of pressure and everything. And so she just reassured me everything was fine, but my IBS in conjunction with healing down there, it was rough, and it was not something anyone ever warned me about, talked to me about. Any of my, like, I never heard anyone talk about like bowel issues and like that kind of stuff after birth. So no shame in the poop game, because it was not fun. And yeah, and if you deal with IBS and it's flared up to the max right now, like I was like, I am eating good. Like I'm eating like low FODMAP or anything, everything I know for my IBS I was doing, and it did not matter. I just had to ride it out. But it also was like a super shock to my system, because like I went through my whole pregnancy being able to eat whatever I wanted and not have IBS. And then all of a sudden I was like, couldn't even eat like a grape or something without running to the bathroom. So bad.
I think I had a flare up too last week from eating too many peanut M&Ms, which I pretty much avoid peanuts, but I let myself have peanut M&Ms. But I think I just ate way too many of them. And then in conjunction with all this, and I just touched myself for the first time on like last Tuesday. I just want to see what it was like down there. And I was like, oh, this doesn't feel right. But I'm like, maybe it's normal. So I was like, I want to make it with a midwife, just check it out. Yeah. Let me see if this is normal or if it's something I need to deal with.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I was diagnosed with IBS when I was like 15. Like my mom took me to the hospital because she wanted me to get a pregnancy test. She thought I was pregnant, even though I was a virgin, because I had my stomach looked distended. But yeah, it's not something that we've ever talked about. We should do a live on that. We should talk about bowel issues after it, because it is, I think it's that fear, but also I think there's something, okay, actually it's probably all of it. It probably has to do with me not getting a lot of greens in, because that is true, because I've been eating, even though it's balanced and healthy, it's been packaged and not as much as I was used to. There's something about the hormones, obviously. And even like you've mentioned, like the intestines getting back in place, I need to book myself a craniosacral therapy session too, because that will help to put things back together, because everything was pushed down and pushed to the side and moved away and stuff. So I think there's like a lot of that. And then also like on the emotional side, and maybe you could relate to this too, because I know you were very busy after having your baby too. And as us being moms and workers, it's like hard to have that balance. And I know for myself, I'm like, I expected myself to have two different programs already done and ready to go out. And I was going to launch my next round of Mind Body Balance. That's supposed to start next week. And the fact that none of that has happened, and I'm allowing myself to be okay with it, but it's still, oh my God, I feel like I've taken a step back. And then remind myself, like, sometimes you got to take a step back to take two steps forward. So it's just, I think it's a lot. It's like stress, emotional stuff, plus structural, plus and it's biology and postpartum.
I know that. And I don't know. The whole, like, your intestines being in a different spot and then, like, readjusting. So, like, testimony to this is so sidetracked, and after this, we can get off. But my sister-in-law developed gallstones in her late pregnancy. And when she had her attacks, were really high up underneath like her left boob. And when she went to the hospital and the attack, they were like, I do not think that that's gallstones. Like it's not in the right place. And so they told her that she had pulled a muscle, and she was like, this is not a pulled muscle. Like, I'm having a gallstone attack. Well, anyways, they end up doing ultrasound. She has gallstones. So she has her baby, and her first gallstone attack after having her baby, her gallstone now is more in the center where your gallbladder is. And I'm, hello, she had a baby in there. She was in her third trimester. Like, it was just all her intestines were pushed up. Going to write. Right. What about? So yeah, your body is not.
And the same thing with the diastasis rect. Everyone approaches it by, let's do some exercise. But you forget, like, the inside, there's actually this thing called the mesentery, which protects your intestines and covers that up. And it's also attached to the abdominal cavity on the outside. So it can actually spread open, and that can help keep your DR spread, even though, like, you have done the exercises and stuff. Like, there's a lot too, like, things definitely get out of whack. So, man, it's just good to have this group to talk to, and I don't know, just keep be open about it. 'Cause when you're holding all that stuff in, no pun intended.
Yeah. I need to have a podcast about poopy issues after birth. I was dying because I was on the phone and I could hear Taylor saying, and I shit myself or something. And I was like, oh, yes. Fun episode.
Yes. Well, I know, I told her, I was like, we should do a live on that. Jesus, because.
Lying to Dave, because I was convinced I would shit in a diaper for the rest of my life.
I told Chris, I'm like, I wish I wouldn't have thrown those adult diapers away, because I got some that were like scented. I don't know if they make unscented diapers, but I don't put anything scented in that area. So I ended up not using the diapers postpartum. And I'm like, man, I shouldn't have thrown them away, maybe, as a joke, but yeah.
All right, well, on that note, ladies.
Yeah.
In today's happy hour.
Okay.
Great conversation, as always. Welcome, Elizabeth and Annie. Welcome back. Love you guys. I'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.